Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So today we're reading from Hare Krishna, first canto, chapter 11, is it? It's Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka, and we're on text number 34. Evam nripanam kshitibhara janmanam. Evam nripanam kshitibhara janmanam. Everyone found it yet or no? 53 of that salmon colored book. Evam nripanam kshitibhara janmanam. Akshauhini bhihi parivritta tejasam. Akshauhini bhihi parivritta tejasam. Vidhaya vairam shvasanaha yatha analam. Vidhaya vairang shvasano yatanalam. Mithaha vadhena uparataha nirayudhaha. Mitho vadheno parato nirayudhaha. Evang nripanam kshitibhara janmanam. Akshauhini bhi parivritta tejasam. Vidhaya vairang shvasano yatanalam. Mitho vadheno parato nirayudhaha. Evang nripanam kshitibhara janmanam. Akshauhini bhi parivritta tejasam. Vidhaya vairang shvasano yatanalam. Mitho vadheno parato nirayudhaha. Yes, go ahead. Evang nripanam kshitibhara janmanam. Akshauhini bhi parivritta tejasam. Vidhaya vairang shvasano yathanalam. Mitho vidheno parito nirayudhaha. Evang nripanam kshitibhara janmanam. Akshauhini bhi parivritta tejasam. Vidhaya vairang shvasano yathanalam. Mitho vadhena parato nirayudhaha. Evang nipanang shitibhara janmanam. Akshauhini bhi parivritta tejasam. Vidhaya vairang shvasano yathanalam. Mitho vidheno parato nirayudhaha. Anyone else? Nobody's going to venture it? Okay. Word for words, please repeat. Evam. Thus. Nripanam. Of the kings or administrators. Kshitibhara. The burden of the earth. Janmanam. Born in that way. Akshohinibhihi. Empowered by a military strength of horses, elephants, chariots, and infantry. Parivritta. Being puffed up by such surroundings. Tejasam. Prowess. Vidhaya. Having created. Vairam. Hostility. Shwasanaha. Interaction of the wind and the pipe plants. Yata. As it is. Analam. Fire. Mithaha. With one another. Vatena. By killing them. Uparataha. Relieved. Nirayudhaha. By himself without being a party to such fighting. Translation. The Lord was pacified after killing those kings who were burdensome to the earth. They were puffed up with their military strength, their horses, elephants, chariots, infantry, etc. He himself was not a party in the fight. He simply created hostility between the powerful administrators, and they fought amongst themselves. He was like the wind, which causes friction between bamboos and so sparks a fire. Please repeat. The Lord was pacified, after killing those kings who were burdensome to the earth. They were puffed up with their military strength. Their horses, elephants, chariots, infantry, etc. He himself was not a party in the fight. He simply created hostility between the powerful administrators. And they fought amongst themselves. He was like the wind which causes friction. Between bamboos and so sparks a fire. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As stated above, all living beings are not factual enjoyers of things which are manifested as God's creation. The Lord is the genuine proprietor and enjoyer of everything manifested in His creation. Unfortunately, influenced by the deluding energy, the living being becomes a false enjoyer under the dictation of the modes of nature. Puffed up by such a false sense of becoming God, the deluded living being increases his material strength by so many activities and thus becomes the burden of the earth, so much so that the earth becomes completely uninhabitable by the sane. This state of affairs is called dharmasya glanihi, or misuse of the energy of the human being. When such misuse of human energy is prominent, the saner living beings become perturbed by the awkward situation created by the vicious administrators, who are simply burdens of the earth. And the Lord appears by His internal potency just to save the saner section of humanity and to alleviate the burden due to the earthly administrators in different parts of the world. He does not favor either of the unwanted administrators, but by His potential power, He creates hostility between such unwanted administrators as the air creates fire in the forest by the friction of the bamboos. The fire in the forest takes place automatically by the force of the air, and similarly, the hostility between different groups of politicians takes place by the unseen design of the Lord. The unwanted administrators, puffed up by false power and military strength, thus become engaged in fighting amongst themselves over ideological conflicts and so exhaust themselves of all powers. The history of the world reflects this factual will of the Lord, and it will continue to be enacted until the living beings are attached to the service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, this fact is very vividly described. Bhagavad Gita 7:14. It is said, "The deluding energy is my potency, And thus it is not possible for the dependent living beings to supersede the strength of the material modes. But those who take shelter in me, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, can cross over the gigantic ocean of material energy. This means that no one can establish peace and prosperity in the world by fruitive activities or by speculative philosophy or ideology. The only way is to surrender unto the Supreme Lord and thus become free from the illusion of the deluding energy. Unfortunately, persons who are engaged in destructive work are unable to surrender to the personality of Godhead. They are all fools of the first order. They are the lowest of the human species of life. They are robbed of their knowledge, although apparently they seem to be academically educated. They are all of the demoniac mentality, always challenging the supreme power of the Lord. Those who are very materialistic, always hankering after material power and strength, are undoubtedly fools of the first order because they have no information of the living energy. And being ignorant of that supreme spiritual science, they are absorbed in material science, which ends with the end of the material body. They are the lowest of human beings because the human life is especially meant for reestablishing the lost relation with the Lord, and they miss this opportunity by being engaged in material activities. They are robbed of their knowledge because even after prolonged speculation, they cannot reach the stage of knowing the personality of Godhead, the summum bonum of everything, and all of them are men of demonic principle, and they suffer the consequences, as did such materialistic heroes as Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, and others. So if we go back to our blue vinyl tab, vinyl binders here, we have a long Mangalacharanam that we recite on Saturday mornings. It's in the where is it? No, that's Namashtika. It's the Mangalacharanam. It begins with here, at the second yellow tab. It's called Pranama Prayers. We can recite these all together. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtang Stapitang Yena Bhutale Swayang Rupa Kadamahyam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandehang Shri Guruho Shri Yuta Padakamalang Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupang Sagrajatang Sahagana Raghunathan Vitang Tang Sajivam Sadvetam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitangscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. A little slower on this, eight verses. Shri Shri Navadvipa Parapradipaha Sandipyamana Satato Bhuviha Chetastamohanti Hiyasya Yatnat Tankirtayamak Prabhupada Devam Shri Bhakti Siddhanta Prachoditak Shri Vyasadyako Shankushalang Kripaluhu Sanlecha Vagdesha Chayeta Dadyas Tankirtayamak Prabhupada Devam Achadyate Yat Paratarka Drishtya Govinda Murtyujvala Bhaskarena Advaita Kadyota Kulang Jagatyang Tankirtayamak Prabhupada Devam Yasyaiva Yatnena Purana Raja Ganga Malakeshava Keli Hangsa Satstotra Ratna Vihiti Haloke Tankirtayamak Prabhupada Devam Sri Radhika Krishna Padada Vinde sahasra hritsu shata mandireshu haropayadyo madhure prativyang tankirtayamah prabhupada devam kaushalya dairyasya sahasra shastra sahasra varshai pratihanyatehi chanda kaler mohacha murhatena tankirtayamah prabhupada devam nana lasad gaura stutha prakasha palakshitaus tapita eva yena krishnan uchinta jana sangha vrikshas tankirtayamak prabhupada devam yo nitya da jivati daivikishu nijasu shikashu tu sang nugami kripam budhir nanda sutashitatma tankirtayamak prabhupada devam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Dinamine Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Daitaya Kripabdhaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Daine Prabhave Namaha Madhuryo Jvala Premadhyaya Sri Rupanuga Bhaktida Sri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine Namo Gaura Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambhara Sambhode Padambhujayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Gauravir Bhava Bhumestvang Nirdeshta Sajjana Priyaha Vaishnava Sarva Bhomak Shri Jagannathaya Te Namaha Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha Pancha Tattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jayatang Suratau Pangor Mama Mandamater Gati Matsarvasva Padam Pojao Radha Madana Mohanao Divyad Vrindaranya Kalpa Drumadha Srimad Ratnagara Singhasanastau Srimad Radha Srila Govinda Devao Prashtali Bhik Sevyamanao Smarami Sriman Rasarasaram Bhi Vangshi Vata Tatastitaha Karshan Venus Vanair Gopir Gopinata Shriestunaha Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vrindayae Tosi Devyae Priyaye Keshavashacha Vishnu Bhakti Prade Devi Satyavatyae Namo Namaha Shri Nishringha Jaya Nishringha Jaya Jaya Nishringha Prahadesha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa Matsamo Nasti Papatma Naparadhi Chakashchana Parihare Pilajame King Bruve Purushottama Yuvatinang Yata Yuni Yunang Cha Yuvatau Yata Manobhi Ramate Tadvang Manome Ramatang Twayi Bhumaus Kalita Padanang Bhumire Vavalambanam Twai Jata Paradhanang Twameva Sharanang Prabho Govinda Vallabhe Radhe Prarthaye Twamahang Shada Twadiyam Iti Janatu Govindo Mang Twayasaha Radhe Vrindavanadhishe Karunamrita Vahini Kripaya Nija Padabja Dasyang Mahyang Pradiyatam Vande Nanda Brajastrinang Padarenum Abhikshnishaha Yasang Hari Katod Gitang Punati Bhuvana Trayam Nama Shreshtam Manum Api Sachiputra Matra Surupam Shri Rupam Tasyagrajamuru Purim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Girivaram Ahoradhika Madhubasang Prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurung tangnatosmi adadanas trinang dantair idang yache punak punaha srimad rupa padam bhoja rajohang syam bhabe bhabe hantaya madri rabala haridasya varyo yadrama krishna charanas parasha pramodaha manang tanoti sahago ganayostayuryat Paniya suya basakandara kandamulahi. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Haribo. So we see Lord Madana Mohan and Srimati Radharani, they have very light headdresses on today. They recently were had touched up their painting, and so they're not wearing any helmets or turban or anything, and they'll be dressed tomorrow in all their finery, and they look very beautiful like this. Also, Lord Chaitanya, you notice he has his lotus feet now have red soles, so as they should. So, this is a verse. Srila Prabhupada doesn't mince words. The Lord was pacified after killing those kings who were burdensome to the earth. They were puffed up with their military strength, their horses, elephants, chariots, infantry, etc. He himself was not a party in the fight. He simply created hostility between the powerful administrators, and they fought amongst themselves. He was like the wind which causes friction between bamboos and so sparks a fire. This verse is spoken, this chapter, Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka, it's part of the first canto. We're getting the setup. The sages in the Naimasharanya have elected Shonaka Rishi to represent them, to ask questions to Suta Goswami, and they're asking questions about what is the ultimate religious principle for people, where have the religious principles gone in the age of Kali, how can people in this age, after Krishna has gone from the planet, how can they attain perfection, and tell us about the pastimes of Lord Krishna who appeared in the family of Yadu. And there's several different questions like that. And Suta Goswami, one by one, began answering them and said that, especially by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, it will cleanse the heart. And they asked some further questions about why did Shukadeva Goswami speak the Srimad Bhagavatam? Why did he learn it? And what, tell us about King Parikshit and how he heard it, how he came to hear it, and all these different things. So the whole setup is being set up in the first canto so that at the end of the first canto, King Parikshit is actually there in front of Shukadeva Goswami, and that dialogue is beginning to start, and Parikshit Maharaj asks Shukadeva Goswami. Now he's been cursed already. That's also covered in the first canto. And he asked Shukadeva Goswami, what's the duty of a man, especially one who's about to die, and please tell me about the pastimes of Lord Krishna, the friend of my grandfather Arjuna. So in this first canto, we're getting a lot of preliminary. The first two cantos are like the lotus feet of the Lord. And we get everything, even in the first chapter, in the first three chapters, we get more and more of everything. The essence of Srimad Bhagavatam is very nicely explained and summarized, so we can very readily accept it. The Srimad Bhagavatam is composed so nicely that it proceeds step by step, so that as we read one canto after the other, by the completion of the ninth canto, we should be God-realized souls, ready to understand the 10th canto, which describes all of the pastimes of Sri Krishna. And then the 11th canto, the first two cantos are the two lotus feet. Second and third canto are like the two thighs. I mean, the third and fourth canto are the two. So that was confusing me. First and second are the two lotus feet. Third and fourth are the thighs. Fifth is the waist. Sixth is the chest. Seventh and eighth are the arms. Ninth is the neck. And the tenth canto is the beautiful smiling face. The 11th canto is the forehead. And 12th canto is the crown. So you know in the beginning of the 10th canto is the description of how the earth, feeling very burdened by the population of so many demons, demoniac kings, she went in the form of a cow. Along with the other demigods, they all went to Lord Brahma. And they prayed, you know, how can we be relieved? And Lord Brahma went to the shore of the milk ocean to offer their prayer to Lord Vishnu, who's lying in the ocean of milk. And on the Shvetadvipa, white island. And the Lord spoke to him in his heart and had him instruct the demigods that he was already aware and he's planning to appear and he will relieve the burden of the earth and kill all the demons or arrange for them to be killed. And they should all start taking birth also in the Yadu dynasty and in the different families to participate in his lila and along with him. And so this is a cause of great jubilation that Krishna is appearing on the earth and making the earth wonderful and vibrant. And all these demigods and sages got to come and take part and to see Krishna that they rarely get to see. In Bhagavad Gita, after Krishna shows the universal form, then he shows his beautiful human-like form and Arjuna's mind is pacified. And then Krishna says, this form is very rare. Even the demigods, they always want to see this form that I'm showing you now. So the demigods, they got to see that beautiful form of Krishna as they appeared and participated in his lila. So in the purport, so anyway, this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna is returning to Dwarka after the Battle of Kurukshetra. The Battle of Kurukshetra has taken place. Then Krishna stayed at some time in Hastinapur, and we've been reading about that in previous chapters. Queen Kunti offered prayers, and Krishna decided to stay for some time, and he helped Yudhishthir cope with the grief and the funerals and everything. They went to see Bhishma Dev, who was passing away. He wanted to pass away with Lord Krishna in front of him. Lord Krishna displayed a four-handed form, and Bhishma Dev instructed Yudhishthir in the science of administration, Niti Shastra, very important instructions for those who are interested in the Varnashram Dharma principles. And then finally, to the great distress of all the residents of Hastinapur and King Yudhishthir and the Pandavas, Krishna finally had to leave Hastinapur, and they were feeling great sorrow to miss him as he went back to his home city of Dwarka. And then when he came into Dwarka, all the residents of Dwarka came out to receive him, and that's what we're hearing about now. And these various explanations are being made. So when it's talking about how he was pacified now after killing those kings, he had been killing so many demons from the time he appeared. You know, all the demons that Kamsa was sending to Vrindavan, and then later he went to Mathura and he killed Kamsa, and he he married these different wives. He killed Bhomasura and Narakasura and that one Jarasandha. He kept bringing more and more armies 18 times, right? He was coming to attack Mathura, and every time he had these big armies with so many phalanxes. Akshohinis are these phalanxes that have so many 100,000 soldiers, actually, infantry, cavalry, you know, chariots and elephants, and so they're big. Each time he was defeated, and Krishna would let him survive, and then he would go back, and his friends would say, "Oh, you just had some bad luck. Don't worry, you can actually beat Krishna. You know, don't be dejected." And he would raise another big army of demons, people who were inimical, who were not surrendered to Krishna, and they would go back and attack him again. And each time Krishna would kill him, would kill all the soldiers and leave him alive. And in this way, Krishna was relieving the burden of the earth of so many millions of demonic soldiers. And then finally, on the last time, Krishna actually left the battlefield. He erected the Dwarka fort. He went and he killed Kalyavana in the cave, or rather he had Kalyavana follow him to the cave, the Yavana, who was untouchable. And then Krishna was hiding in the cave, and there was a Muchakunda was sleeping there for a long time after having been benedicted by the demigods that no one could disturb him or sleeping or he could kill them. And Kalyavana went and kicked Muchakunda, thinking it to be Krishna. Muchakunda woke up and rays of fire came out of his eyes and burned Kalyavana to ashes. So Krishna killed him in that way without even touching him. And Krishna kidnapped the princess Rukmini. We were talking about that before. And then he also killed the Bhomasura and married 16,000 wives. And so he was killing. Actually, Srila Prabhupada said in one lecture, at least in one lecture I've heard him here say, probably more than one, that Krishna practically, most of what he's doing is killing demons. But Prabhupada points out that for killing demons, Krishna does not have to appear, actually. For killing demons, Krishna has so many powerful agents that he could send and take care of. Just like Krishna could just send one big tsunami or earthquake or hurricane or oil spill or whatever to kill so many millions of people. He doesn't have to personally appear, but he personally appears because he also shows how he protects his devotees and how he loves them. Just like Sri Prahlad Maharaj, he's being harassed by his father, demon Hiranyakashipu, and Krishna appears to say, "Look how I will protect you. I'll kill your tormentor right in front of you with my bare hands for your pleasure, you know, to protect you." This is the loving exchange between the devotee who feels completely maintained and protected by Krishna, and Krishna, who will always protect and care for his devotees. So sometimes there's a forest fire in Vrindavan, and what do the inhabitants of Vrindavan do when they're in trouble? They just think of Krishna. They go to Krishna for protection. Even though Krishna's just a little boy, but they think, "Oh, Krishna, protect us. There's a fire. We're going to be swallowed up." And they close their eyes, and Krishna just swallows up the whole fire, and then they're safe again. And then they don't even think of Krishna as God. They just love Krishna as the most beautiful boy. His yoga maya lets them forget that he's God. So here it's stated that the living beings are not the factual enjoyer of things which are manifested as God's creation. The Lord is the genuine proprietor and enjoyer of everything. Bhoktaram jagyatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamang shantim richati. Those who accept that Krishna is really the enjoyer of everything, who understand the factual position that he's the proprietor, he's the benefactor of all the sacrifices, he's the Lord of all the planets and of all the demigods, they're devotees, and they have the divine qualities of devotees, and they become peaceful and happy by nature. And that we should aspire to become devotees like that and develop those divine qualities that Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, like fearlessness and steadfastness and equanimity, being equally disposed, tolerant, tranquil, averse to fault-finding. All these different wonderful qualities of the demigods appear in the body of devotees. But the others, those who are influenced by the deluding energy, they're trying to become false enjoyers under the dictation of the modes of nature. And they're described, and they can't understand Krishna. And when he comes in the form of a human being, they deride him. They just think he's someone to compete with, just another human. They don't understand that he's the Lord of everyone. So they deride him. "Fools deride me when I descend in my human form." What's the verse? "Avajananti mang mudha manushing tanamashrita parambhava majananto mama bhuta maheshwaram." And Srila Prabhupada is in this purport, you can see that you can actually see in this purport, if you know Bhagavad Gita, you'll see that he's paraphrasing a lot of verses throughout this purport. But he's saying that that such demons, they're I guess it's later on that all of their efforts at knowledge and all their hopes to achieve successful pious activities. We'll find it when we read through the purport. But that's the next verse. Mokha sha mokha karmano mokha jnana vichetasaha saha rakshasi masuring chaiva prakriting mohining shritaha. Those who partake of this atheistic mentality of demons, they are dashed in all their hopes, in all their efforts at knowledge, in all their efforts at piety. Everything goes to hell because of their not accepting Krishna. Whereas the devotees, on the other hand, are described as mahatmas, and they take shelter of the divine energy, diving prakriti mashrita, and they're always worshipping him. Satatang kirtayanto mang yatantascha dridhavrataha namasyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasite. They're always engaged in offering obeisances to him, chanting his holy names, glorifying him, offering him obeisances, and worshiping him with firm determination. So, anyway, it's said in the Mahabharata that in the Satya Yuga, demons were on different planets. And in the Treta Yuga, they were just in different countries, in different dynasties, like when Rama was here fighting against Lanka, the demons were in different countries. In the Dwapara Yuga, demons and devotees appeared in the same families, like in the Mahabharata, right? The Duryodhana was fighting against Yudhishthira, and they were in the same dynasty. And in Kali Yuga, they're in the same person, in the same body. So we have our demoniac qualities and our demoniac our tendencies within our body. Krishna explains that lust has captured different places in our material body, in our subtle body as well, our senses, our mind, our intelligence, and that we have to conquer this enemy which is covering our real knowledge and it's burning us like fire and forcing us to engage in sinful activities. And Arjuna often approaches Krishna in Bhagavad Gita and calls him Madhusudana, destroyer of the Madhu demon, and asks him questions in Bhagavad Gita. And Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that Arjuna is, in this way, by calling him Madhusudana, he's likening his doubts to different demons. And he's asking Krishna to destroy these doubts that are like demons. Krishna is the killer of all the troublesome demons. And we sing that song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Braja jana palana asura kula nashana. So he's the protector of the inhabitants of Braj, and he's the killer of the whole families of demons, whole dynasties of demons, asura kula nashana. All these demons that can disturb us and disturb the demigods, disturb the devotees and the godly people, and disturb the earth. So after the battle of Kurukshetra, he's killed almost all of them. There's a few more, Dantavakra and Shishupal. Was that? And anyway, he's still killing a few more. And then finally the demigods appear in the 11th canto with Lord Brahma, and the demigods appear and they say, "Thank you, you've done everything so wonderfully and all your pastimes have been completed, and now you can return to your spiritual..." Not that he needed their permission, but they were saying, "Now we understand you're going to return to your abode." And so he was pacified now. Returning to Dwarka, he was pacified after the battle of Kurukshetra, and these demons were killed. And Srila Prabhupada explains how the demons behave. This is explained in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The demons, not being surrendered to Krishna, they try to make themselves into like Krishna. So they develop these qualities of harshness, anger, conceit, dambo, darpo, bhimanascha, krodhat, parushyam evacha. And they think, "So much wealth is mine today. Ishwaro aham aham bhogi, siddho aham balavan sukhi. I'm perfect, powerful, and happy. I'm the enjoyer. I am the maintainer. I am the..." controller, and I will kill my enemies, and my other enemies I've already killed, and I'm just going to enjoy life like this. And they're deluded by these false desires, and they become very, very, they just go down into more and more degraded existence. And Krishna keeps sending them into more and more lower degraded species of life as they can't give up this mentality. So when such demons become prominent on the earth, it's harmful to the ordinary people, and arrangements have to be made for them to be killed. Srila Prabhupada wrote in the seventh canto how, in one purport, I think it was in the seventh canto, how he saw in his own lifetime the Germans, you know, the two great wars, right? Between the Germans and the French and the English and the Russians. And the Germans thought, I will destroy England, you know, we'll destroy them. And the English thought, I'll destroy Germany. And they thought, for all their reasons they had and their explanations and their politics, and they fought against each other. He said they were all destroyed. Every country, they were all. And the United States, kind of, because it was on the other side of the ocean, they didn't have any bombs dropped on it and stuff very much. But Japan and Russia, I mean, Russia was like, you know, like 20% of their population was destroyed in the war, you know, just devastated. And these wars come in some cases, you know, Krishna comes personally and kills a demon and protects the devotees. In other cases, he's directing it by making it just appear. And nobody really understands why they're fighting. They don't see Krishna's hand behind it, but they're fighting against each other. And that's being described here, just like the wind, the unseen wind is causing the bamboo to create a forest fire, and the bamboo friction against each other. So the demons, they get in friction against each other, and they bring their armies and their weapons and everything, and they fight against each other, and so many of them die. And then the earth is cleansed of this burden, actually. When Krishna showed the universal form to Arjuna, he asked, who are you? What's your mission? And Krishna said, I'm time, and I've come to destroy everybody, the whole world. Everybody but the Pandavas, they're all going to die on this battlefield. Kalosmi lokakshaya krit pravridham. So then he told Arjuna, get up and fight, you know, win glory. It's going to happen anyway. It's the destiny. But you have to become my instrument. Nimattamatrang bhava savyasachim. So Krishna appears when there's dharmasya glani. Yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhaviti bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam shujamyaham. And he makes the world safe. Those who take shelter can cross over the gigantic ocean of material energy. So what Prabhupada is saying in this part of the purport, he's quoting from the seventh chapter, and throughout the rest of the purport, we can see he's quoting from the seventh chapter and the ninth chapter. There we say they are robbed of their knowledge, although apparently they seem academically educated. These are references to the kinds of people that never surrender to Krishna. The impious people, the duskritina, the miscreants, bad actors, they don't surrender to Krishna. In the last part of the big long paragraph, Srila Prabhupada is explaining that the solution to all these problems of the world is to surrender to Krishna. But those who don't surrender to Krishna, they can't supersede the strength of the modes of nature. Daivihesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etang tarantite. So, by surrendering to Krishna, one easily crosses over the material nature and one gets carried by the internal energy, by Srimati Radharani, by Bhakti Devi. One gets engaged in devotional service and becomes peaceful and happy. And one can, by just chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. All these misconceptions, the false ego can be pierced. One can begin to understand who one really is as an eternal servant of Krishna, a loving servant, and achieve that loving devotion. and everything becomes very peaceful, and all the miseries of material existence become very insignificant. But others who try to become the lords of all they survey and struggle as demons with other demons, they can't. They're actually under the firm control of the modes of the material nature, even though they don't see it, and all their hopes are dashed, and they can't cross over, and they can't solve the problems. So we're trying to solve the problems of life through material solutions, material science, technology, you know, politics, and so forth. But if we don't have this element of surrender to Krishna, there won't be the solution. It's not that the technology can't be used. Anything can be used in service of Krishna. If we have this technology, we must use it in service of Krishna to do our sacrifice. In previous ages, we did sacrifices with grains and butter and the nice things. But we have to use our manufactured goods also to do this Harinam Sankirtan sacrifice. Get in the car and bring people out to the to Palo Alto and bring the drums there and bring the... We have to use what we have. But Srila Prabhupada says, no one can establish peace and prosperity in the world by fruitive activities or by speculative philosophy or ideology. The only way is to surrender unto the Supreme Lord and thus become free from the illusion of the deluding energy. And what is the Supreme Lord's order? I mean, we surrender, we carry out his order, and he orders us to do Harinama Sankirtan. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nastyeva, 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 Gatiranyata. There's no other way. There's no other way. There's no other way to attain salvation, peace, prosperity, everything in this world. It's the only way to attain what the gati, the goal. So that is chanting the holy name of Krishna, which we've been glorifying all morning in various prayers. So the Lord came again as Lord Chaitanya to spread this Harinama Sankirtana movement. And he gathered his devotees in Srivas Thakur's house, and they would chant together and display this lila. He would show himself to be Lord Krishna in different ways, and the devotees in great ecstasy would chant all night long, and the house would be roaring with kirtan of the holy names of Krishna. And then, when they became so... they couldn't contain their ecstasy, Lord Chaitanya said, no, we can take it onto the street. We need to give it to everyone, every single person, regardless of their qualification or not qualification, if they're sinful, if they're pious, if they're born in a high family or a low family, or their occupation is high or low, or anything, they should all get the Harinama mercy, and they should taste this ecstasy that you're tasting now too. Don't worry about it. When Krishna came, he said to Arjuna, then first you have to surrender to me, right? Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekang sharanang vraja. Then first you surrender me, and then I'll protect you from all sins. Don't fear. But Lord Chaitanya is more merciful. He said, let's go out and get them. They're not surrendering anyway. Let's go get them and let them hear the holy name and let them take the prasadam. Right? This is Lord Chaitanya's mood. This is his mission. He created this beautiful mango tree with these beautiful big mango fruits with no seeds and no skins, just wonderful mango. And he said, I can't distribute these all myself. I want to give these to everybody, but I can't do it all by myself. And I want all of you. You have to go out and distribute this fruit to everyone. I'm just the gardener. I'm only one person. How can I distribute it all? So he's engaging us all. This is also his order, that we have to go out on Sankirtan and help these demoniac persons. So this is the way to kill the demons within our own nature, and also to kill the demons who are burdening the earth. And Lord Chaitanya doesn't actually kill their bodies in this age. When Jagai and Madhai offended Lord Nityananda and had broken and caused him an injury, caused him to bleed, hitting him, striking him on the head with a pot, then Lord Chaitanya immediately appeared with his chakra ready to cut off the head of the offenders. And Lord Nityananda said, no, don't kill them. You give them your mercy, because if you have to kill all the demons, then you'll have to, in Kali Yuga, you'll have to kill everyone, everybody, every single person. There's nobody who's pious here, really. So Because pious people, they surrender to Krishna. Four kinds of pious people: those desiring wealth, those in distress, those who are curious, and those who are wise. You know, and of those, the ones who are wise, who don't come seeking anything else, they're especially dear to Krishna, and they understand Vasudeva Sarvamiti, and they surrender to Krishna totally, utterly, purely, without any desire for return. There's four kinds that don't surrender to Krishna. They're described here. Those who are very materialistic, always hanking after material power and strength, are undoubtedly fools of the first order. So they're mudhas, they're fools of the first order. And being ignorant of the supreme spiritual science, they're absorbed in material science, which ends with the end of the material body. They're the lowest of human beings, Naradama, because human life is especially meant for reestablishing the lost relation with the Lord, and they miss the opportunity by being engaged in material activities. They are robbed of their knowledge, mayaya paritajnana, because even after prolonged speculation, they cannot reach to the stage of knowing the personality of Godhead, the summum bonum of everything. And all of them are men of demoniac principle, asuram bhavamashritaha, and they suffer the consequences, as did the materialistic heroes as Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Kamsa, and others. But in this Kali Yuga, Lord Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya, he comes and says, even those duskritinas, let's give them an opportunity. Let's go out in the street. We'll chant the holy name. We'll try to distribute a book to them. Sir, please consider this book. You're very great. You're very learned. You have so many great qualities. You're just this, like a saintly person, very aristocratic with all your aristocratic role. You really know how to. Last night I met some guy. He took the Bhagavad Gita, just only gave me a couple dollars, but it was all about himself. He just was talking about how wonderful he was, and you know, he's feeling so wonderful. He was a Jewish man. He was talking about how great the Jews are. They're very philanthropic, and because I'm also from Jewish family, so I was able to talk of where my family was from and everything like that. And he was like taking me into his and he was telling me how he was in San Francisco in the 60s, and he remembers the Hare Krishnas from the hippie days back then, and you know, and I was telling him, oh, you're so hip and cool, you know. He was like a 70-something-year-old jewelry dealer. So pretty much he said, oh, I'm not going to read the Bhagavad Gita, but I said, oh, no, please take it, just give something, it will bring good fortune to your home, you know, and your wife can have it, it will make her fortunate to just have it. Even if you don't read it, you can just touch it, look at the pictures. And so this is what we're doing. We're going out and meeting the people, and they're actually all being conducted by the modes of nature. They may be very intelligent people. They have many good qualities. They may be very wealthy people and very beautiful people. But all those qualities are like zero if they're not devotees of Krishna. If there's many, many zeros and they become devotees of Krishna, that's like putting a one in front of the zeros. You have a big number. They have all these things. They've been given, according to the chain of their previous works and their past life, they have all these things they've been given, but they're not the enjoyers of them, as we understand from the first line of this purport. Krishna's the enjoyer. We were reading yesterday in the second canto how before we can see something, before we can smell something, before we can taste something, Krishna has to first, Super Soul has to first see it and smell it and taste it. Everything, we can't even experience anything without Krishna's presence. We're part and parcel of Krishna. We don't have any separate existence from Krishna. But the whole material endeavor is to have a separate existence from Krishna. And that's why it's doomed from the very start. Our existence as Krishna's servants is very wonderful and eternal, and it's ever fresh, and it's adventurous and full of juice and life. And our materialistic endeavor to be separate from Krishna is doomed from the very start, and the so-called pleasure of material pleasure separate from Krishna is actually the source of misery, and it comes along with it comes so much suffering, and it can't be separated from that suffering. But the materialistic person, under the bewilderment of the material energy consisting of three modes, doesn't perceive that. What he thinks of as suffering is actually what he thinks of as enjoyment is actually causing him suffering, but he doesn't see how it is like that. So we're there to try to give them a chance to start to see that. And they won't. We won't be able to convince most of them just by talking to them. We'll tell them what we can, something nice that they can understand. This book is about yoga. It's about karma and reincarnation. It's a very great ancient book. We're going today is a Sankirtan festival. We're having in honor of Janmashtami, all the devotees from all over the Bay Area, we're going out door to door and on different street corners and things. We're putting up stands of our books. And when people come up and we're inviting them to come over and look at the books, or when they open their door, we're saying, hi, we're from the Hare Krishna temple and we have these nice books. We'd like you to take one and leave a donation. And in this way, we're pushing on the Sankirtan movement. Sri Krishna Purushottama is leading the charge today. So we have some goals to satisfy Lord Krishna for his birthday. We have some goals of how many books we're going to distribute. How much is it?
3,001
books. And we'll collect $5,500. So it should be easy. So we're going to go out today and tomorrow, and then next weekend we're going to have Harinam Sankirtan in Palo Alto like we did tonight on Friday night, and then again Saturday and Sunday we're going to go out. And we're going to have Vaishasika with us then, so it's going to be bigger then. But when he's present, just like Krishna was present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So they might not understand everything right away, but if they touch the book, if they say something nice, you know, we can flatter them, you know, not excessively, but you find something good in them to admire, because everyone has a little, you know, the demons and the demigods are in the same body, so everyone has a little demigod in them too. When I was a kid, they had all these cartoons. They would have a little angel appeared on one shoulder and a little devil would appear on the other shoulder and say, you know, no, don't do that. Don't steal the pie, you know. And then the devil would say, do it. You'll enjoy it. Steal the pie. So we all have this going on, and they all have it. And Lord Chaitanya has come to deliver us all. He doesn't take sides. This point is being made in this verse. Krishna doesn't actually take sides. Samohang sarva. This is an inconsistent. This is logical inconsistency. This morning you were talking about how can things be inconsistent. In the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Samohang sarva bhuteshu name dveshyosti napriyaha ye bhajanti tu maam eva maite teshu chapyaham. So he's saying, I'm completely neutral. I don't envy anyone. I don't favor anyone. But those who worship me and love me and perform devotional service to me, oh, they're very dear to me, and I always take care of them. I always favor them. Bhaktivatsala, he always favors them. So that seems inconsistent. If he doesn't favor anyone, then how can he favor the devotees? But this is just his favoring of the devotees is just another way of how he expresses his neutrality. That is, as you surrender to him, he rewards you accordingly. If you want to become his lover, then he's so happy, actually. He really wants that you should get out of ignorance. He doesn't need anything, but he enjoys engaging in loving exchanges with his devotees. But those devotees in the material world who are in ignorance have, for some reason, causelessly are unwilling to surrender to him, are unwilling to serve him, then he gives them that too. This is how he expresses it. He gives them what they want. If they want to ignore him, if they want to forget him, he gives them that forgetfulness. But he doesn't want that forgetfulness, actually. His real heart's desire is that they will come and enjoy with him. And he enjoys exchanging that love with them. But he has millions of billions of unlimited, infinite number of devotees already enjoying with him eternally in the spiritual world. But the material world is the place where people in ignorance think, oh, we don't need him. Who is him? What's so important about him? What has he done for me? They're thinking in this mentality. So we're going out on his behalf today to try to remember people, because those who are in the mode of goodness, they naturally seem to be favored. The demigods are basically in the mode of goodness. So when the mode of goodness is prominent, they become favored. When the mode of ignorance and passion become prominent, the demons come into prominence. And Krishna himself is neutral between all these things. He doesn't take sides between the demigods and the devotee. In fact, Some of the greatest pure devotees appear, like Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj. They appear in the families of the Daityas, actually, but he favors them over the demigods, even because they're pure devotees, and that's the only thing that really attracts him is pure devotional service. There's devotional service in different modes of nature, and the devotional service in the mode of ignorance, as described by Lord Kapila Dev, is the devotee feels that he's the only one, he's the only devotee. Hare Krishna! Gaur Krishna! Don't go on the altar. We know you're attracted. So, in the mode of ignorance, one is expressing their devotion through hostility and anger and feeling superior to others. And in the mode of passion, one is expressing his devotion by worshipping Krishna, hoping to get something in exchange, some fame, some wealth. And these two devotees in the mode of ignorance and passion, they feel they have a separate interest from the Lord. In the mode of goodness, one is worshipping Krishna because it's their duty, they want to get purified. And we should try to come to worship in the mode of goodness and come to clear out our unwanted things and become purified. But in the transcendental, when one is beyond the three modes of nature completely, mang cha yo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sakunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate, then the real bhakti begins, which is spontaneous. The devotional service that's free from any influence of the modes of nature is yuvatinam yata yuni, like we were chanting that verse, that just like a young men and young women are attracted to each other. Without nobody has to teach them, but they become attracted like that. Similarly, the devotee's mind is attracted to Krishna, to his devotional service. The pure devotee's mind is spontaneously attracted. In fact, you can't keep him away from devotional service, even if you try. And just like the Ganges flows down into the sea, and it flows and finds its way around any obstacle, but it gets to the sea. So the pure devotee, who's free from the modes of nature, he automatically serves Krishna like that. He can't be stopped. When Krishna met with the gopis, with the residents of Vrindavan at Kurukshetra, during the time of the solar eclipse, and he met privately with Radharani, and she was complaining about his absence from Vrindavan, and how could you turn your back on Mother Yashoda? How could you turn your back on Nanda Maharaj and all the cowherd boys and all the people who love you so much? And you know, you've abandoned us. And Krishna was teaching her Bhagavad Gita, you know, that if you think of me, I'm present. When you think of me, when you chant my name, I'm personally present. If you do this yoga, then you won't feel that I'm absent. But Radharani was experiencing ecstasy of separation. She was already the greatest devotee. So she chastised him. She said, you know, what do you mean if I think of you? Thinking of you is my problem. I can't stop thinking of you. It's because of thinking of you that I'm suffering so much. And this is the quality of the great pure devotees, that they can't, even if they try to stop thinking of Krishna, actually the thinking of Krishna hurts them, because they're thinking of him in the mood of separation, and it's not really hurt. It's a more intense kind of yoga and a more intense kind of bliss, but it appears like when we are lonesome and, you know, feeling you know, sadness of being separated from those we love. They say saudade in Brazilian, in Portuguese. But, you know, this kind of this longing that we're lonesome and missing home, homesick, or missing those we love who've gone away from their home and we want them back at home. So, Hare Krishna, Anupam. So the great devotees, they're feeling that kind of ecstasy. And Lord Chaitanya is actually distributing this kind of love, that we can actually learn to feel that kind of ecstasy where we can't bear to be separate from Krishna even for a minute. The demons are thinking, oh, why do I have to chant Hare Krishna? Can I go watch TV now? Can I go read the newspaper or do something else? I have some other things to do. I want to just relax and do something and eat something and enjoy something. But the devotees are thinking, I don't want to do anything. That, you know, why are they making me do these things when it distracts me from worshiping Krishna? They just want to worship Krishna constantly. So the pure devotees. So we're trying to become pure devotees like that. And by pleasing Srila Prabhupada, by going out on this book distribution, going out on this Sankirtan, carrying out his service, we will attract the attention of Prabhupada, we'll attract the attention of Krishna. Prabhupada always expressed us so much how important it is that he wanted us to push on this Hare Krishna movement. By distributing books, books are the basis that this Hare Krishna movement will become understood, be taken seriously. People will eventually, they'll come to appreciate the value of these books, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction. And there will be, you know, university degrees dedicated to, you know, studying Prabhupada's books. And there will be university departments studying the science of what is the soul and what is matter and how do we get out of material and illusion. Right now, Prabhupada wrote to my wife when when she was initiated. She had sent him a present, a basket. I forget what she sent him, a basket of things. And Srila Prabhupada wrote him back, and he said that the scientists and the politicians, they are taking everyone to hell. And therefore, please study my books very carefully. We have to establish this as the real alternative. So when those who are the scientists and those who are the politicians and those who are the big industrial leaders, when they become devotees, when everyone becomes devotees, the world will be much more safe and suitable place for the sane elements of the population to live. And everyone can make progress toward the goal of life, and human society can perform sacrifice for pleasing Krishna, which is what we're supposed to be doing as human beings. We're supposed to be organizing ourselves nicely to do sacrifices for Krishna that pleases Krishna under the direction of expert devotees who understand how to please Krishna and what Krishna wants us to do and how we can do that so that it will be good. And that will establish real peace and prosperity, and more than that, it will establish love of Krishna, which is the highest good for everyone. Hare Krishna. So now is our time to have comments and discussion. And please use the microphone. I'm sorry, what over there? What's your name? I forgot your name. Lalita. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I have a doubt, Prabhuji. You had said Krishna does not have to appear personally to kill the demons, like tsunami and earthquakes and other things. But my doubt is, how come innocent people are killed in that? It's not only the demons and the bad people who are killed. Even there are many innocent people who are killed in that.
Well, if innocent people are killed, then they go, if they're actually innocent people, then they go to better. It's their time to go to a better. Actually, I was having this discussion with Mahatma when he was here, because also, you know, sometimes demons can kill. You know, like Srila Prabhupada was explaining. You know, you could say if an animal is killed, well, it has to die anyway, right? So what's wrong with killing it? But if you kill it when it's not its time to die, then it, you know, based on its karma, it has to take so many. It has to spend so much time as a dog, or so much time as a mosquito, or something like that. If you kill it before its time, then it will have to take birth again in that species before it can progress to the next species. So anyway, the intricacies of action and reaction are very difficult to understand. But the universe is just. Even though there's people who do injustice in the universe, they get what they deserve. And the way to get out of the entanglement is to tolerate what we have. We're reaping the fruits of what we previously sowed, you know. So in our previous lifetimes, in our previous actions. So there's a verse in the 10th canto in the prayers of Lord Brahma in the 14th chapter. Tatte nukampam susumikshimano bunjana evatma kritang vipakam ridvag vapurbhir bhagavan namaste jiveta bhajyo muktipade svadhaya bhak. I may have mangled one or two words. But the idea is that we should tolerate what we're getting now and all the time continue being devotees, offering from the core of our heart, with our body, mind, and words, offering our obeisances to the Lord. And in that way, we attain liberation. We can say, oh, they're innocent people, but they came to this world somehow, and they took birth in this life somehow. So we don't know exactly what they deserved or what they didn't deserve or why. But if they are innocent people, then Krishna purifies us by the fire of ordeal, actually. Even his devotees, you see the Pandavas, how much they suffered, you know. But they bore the suffering as devotees. And that was an example for us, that it's not that by becoming devotees we get in. We shouldn't think, oh, by becoming devotees I'll live in the lap of luxury and I'll just always, you know, sit around and eat bonbons and watch television shows or Bollywood movies on, you know, 300 channels or whatever. But actually, by being devotees, we become very, very happy and peaceful by because we can see Krishna in our mind and we feel united with the transcendental, supreme, absolute person beyond time and space, and we feel great joy in our devotional service internally. And then externally, we have a material body that has to die. But even we see that as Krishna's mercy. Sometimes it's said that when Krishna says to Yudhishthira Maharaj, when I want to show special favor to someone, I take all his wealth away. And then all his so-called friends and family abandon him, and he's totally alone in the world, and he has no one to call out to but me. And so then he totally surrenders to me and becomes completely in love with me. And that's his great achievement. That's my mercy to such a person. So I don't know if I answered your question.
Actually, I think I understood you. Like, it's all your karma also. Like, some good deeds you might have done, some bad deeds you might have done. So maybe the innocent people who died, some bad thing they have done, they have to die.
But one thing we should know is that when Krishna kills people, then they're liberated. You know, so if you have the good fortune of being killed by Krishna, then this is something also very merciful. He's totally pure. He's not affected by the modes of nature. He's not within the material creation. He's not about, you know, the various causes and effects of things that we see. Oh, this war was started because, you know, Otto von Bismarck, you know, arrange for the Ems telegram to be sent, and then Louis Napoleon, Emperor the Third, you know, had to get caught into a war or whatever. But we think these are the causes. Krishna's beyond all those causes and effects. He's never forced to do anything, and he's never, he's the creation of all the energies of cause and effect, actually. And he's always just situated happily. We have to understand that, how he's situated beyond everything. And yet, if he personally comes to earth and when he walks on the earth, everyone who died on the Battle of Kurukshetra, they died where they were able to see Krishna. So they were liberated. But those, actually, it's in the Varaha Purana, it says, some demons, they were not fortunate enough to die. But because they saw Krishna, they were benedicted, so they got to take birth in Brahmin families in Kali Yuga. But because they were still demons, they didn't practice. they still carried out their miserly, demonic mood, and they didn't actually teach the Vedas and disseminate to everyone like they were supposed to. That's actually in a purport in the first canto, when the punishment and reward of Kali chapter, I think.
I got one more doubt. Like,
yes, Krishna Purushottama Prabhu.
Prabhuji, sometimes we need to get Ugra Karma also, right? That's my question or my illusion. Like, when tsunami came in India, there are a lot of Brahmanas, so many people died. So, like, some people are maybe innocent and like we will get the ugra karma, like they are killing a lot of cows nowadays, and we need to get their sufferings, we need to get their karma also. Means like if the king does anything wrong, all the entire kingdom is suffers, like yada raja tada praja. Like how it works in Kali Yuga, Prabhu? It, we need to get the ugra karma or not?
So sometimes, you know, the one person in a village does something wrong, and so something terrible happens to the village, and it happens to everyone else. So, Hare Krishna, Avinashi, do you have to leave now, or okay? Yeah, please make sure you get prasadam before you go. We're gonna end soon and have Guru Puja, and okay. You know the story of Yamunacharya. He was a boy pandit, you know, very, very learned, but he was poor, and his guru had been defeated by the king's pandit. And I guess it was the Pallava dynasty in South India. And the king would have this pandit go around, and anybody who was defeated by him in debate would have to pay a tax. And so when the Yamunacharya's guru was away, one of the disciples of the king's pundit came to collect the tax, and Yamunacharya didn't know about it, but he loved his guru, and he said, "What is this?" And they said insulting words. You know, your guru is not capable of, you know, standing up to the king's pundit. Now he has to pay a tax, and so Yamunacharya, like an 11 or so year old boy, you know, he said, "That's not true. My guru can defeat the king's pundit. I can defeat the king's pundit." And he made arrangement, and there was a big debate. So part of the debate, how he won the debate, and he actually became a king. By winning this debate, the wife, the main queen of the king, said, "This boy is so young, and he's up against this big pundit of yours, and if he is defeated by your pundit, I'll become your maidservant." And then the king said, "If he defeats my pundit, then I'll give him half of my kingdom." So then one of the ways he defeated the pundit, he kind of insulted him. He said, you know, the pundit started asking him all these questions, and he just easily answered them, questions about Sanskrit grammar and different, you know, questions of knowledge from the Vedas, and he easily answered them. And he said, "You must think that just because you're so big and I'm so small that I won't be able to answer your questions. But if that were true, then a water buffalo would be able to answer more questions than you." You know? So he was insulting. So the pundit became angry, and he said, "Well, then you ask me some questions." And one of the questions was, you know, I'm telling the long version of the story, but one of the questions was, you know, "Well, prove that the following statement is false." You know, one of the statements was, "Well, the king's mother is not a barren woman." You have to prove that that's false. In other words, that the king's mother is a barren woman. You know, and one of the statements was, you know, so the pundit was taking, one of the statements was, "Prove that the king, prove that this statement is false. The king is a pious man." So you have to prove that that's false. So so the pundit was saying, "This is treason. You can't, you're insinuating that the king is not a pious man." You know? And then he said, "No, you just can't answer my question. No, next one is, prove that the king's wife is not a chaste woman." You know? So they said, "Arrest him!" You know? And then he said, "No, you've challenged me to a debate." So they said, "All right then, you prove it, then we'll arrest you." You know, the king said, "That's good, yeah, let him prove it, then we'll arrest him, you know, if he can't prove it." So the way he proved, you know, the king's mother is a barren woman, because in Manusmriti it says that a woman who has only one child should be considered barren. So he happened to know that the king was an only child, so then he was successful in that. The pundit was, "Yeah, that, but the other things, they're treasonous. You can't prove that." So the king the king is not a pious man. How did he prove that? Because he said, oh, the king himself, his own deeds are perfectly pious. He isn't committing any sins. But it's in the Manusmriti again that 1/5 of the sins of the whole kingdom and 1/5 of the pious credit of the whole kingdom is enjoyed by the king himself, by this nature. Therefore, although the king himself is without fault, still there are people in his kingdom, I know, who commit sinful activities, and the king has to share in that sin. So, all right, but the last one, you can't do the last one. And he said, oh, but it's also in the Manusmriti that the king is a representation of 5 demigods, you know, the fire and air and, you know, Indra and so forth. So although the queen is a perfectly chaste wife to the king, at the same time, she's married to these other 5 demigods. But anyway, so to answer your question, yeah, so if people in the kingdom do wrong, then the king may have to suffer some benefit, and similarly, or some result, or some penalty. And similarly, if someone in your community does wrong, the question can be there that the whole community may have to suffer. But if you're, I suppose this is all on the platform of, you know, enjoying and suffering the results of material activities. Yas twindr gopam matavendra mahoswa karma bandhanu rupa palabhajana matanoti karmani nirdahati kintu chabhakti bhajang govindamadi purushang tamaham bhajami. Yeah, people have to enjoy and suffer, you know, good karma and bad karma. You know, good karma in the form of beauty and wealth and high birth and education and so forth, long life, and bad karma in the form of the opposite of those things, you know. But all of that is sort of external to and irrelevant to the real value in life, which is devotional service. And this verse, Lord Brahma is saying, that we read in Brahma Samhita, that Krishna is awarding exactly to everyone, according to their deeds, according to the chain of their deeds, exactly what they deserve, according to the laws of nature, no less in the case of the tiny ant called Indragopa than in the real Indra, the king of all the devas. They all have to be enjoying or suffering according to their deeds. And whether there can be some result of someone else's deeds, well, there must be some reason that you're connected to that other person, and there must be some reason that you're involved in that deed too. So it's all a very intricate web. The web of material actions and reactions becomes extremely intricate. Why you even desire to do something now is based on something you did in the past. So if you desire to do something sinful now, and you act on that desire, you're creating new seeds, new sins, but it's all part of your previous things, and it all becomes very complicated. So much so, as Prabhupada says in this purport, there's no solution through fruitive act. You can try to make a solution by doing very pious deeds and following the Vedas and doing rituals and sacrifices and pleasing everybody. But if you don't surrender to Krishna, it won't work. You see in the 10th canto the story of King Riga, he gave so many cows in charity. That's a very pious thing. You know, inconceivable millions of cows every day to Brahmins, you know, very well qualified Brahmins. He did it so nicely. But as it so happened, one cow escaped one herd and went into another Brahmin's herd. And the Brahmins noticed it, and one said, "You gave me that cow, and now you gave it to him." And he said, "Oh, no, no, I'm sorry, it's such a mistake. I'll give you 10,000 cows instead of that cow, all with gold on their hooves and silver on their horns." And the Brahmin said, "No, I want that one, you know." And then he said, "Oh, don't worry." And he went to the other Brahmin and said, "You know, this was a mistake. I had previously given this to that Brahmin, and he wandered into your herd. Let me give you 10,000 cows instead of that one." And he said, "No, no, I only want this one. You gave it to me now." And he said, "I'll give you hundreds of thousands in the place for that one." "No, I won't be satisfied. This is a matter of principle. I want this cow." And they both Brahmins wouldn't be satisfied. So to by doing material fruit of activities, there is no solution. Ultimately, you can elevate yourself to higher and higher material births, and you can become more and more involved in mode of goodness, and you can be in the planets of the demigods. But it's dangerous in the planets of the demigods because there's great material pleasure. You know, the different modes of nature bind in different ways. And the mode of goodness binds us by a sense of superiority, a sense of superiority in knowledge, and a sense of happiness, you know. So typically the Brahmin or the scientist is the example of someone who feels that by becoming more knowledgeable and they've become superior to others and now they're peaceful and happy. But they become thinking who they are, you know. I'm a superior person. And it binds them. And then sooner or later, the modes change and the seasons come and go and there's a reverse of fortune. The wheel of fortune goes up, it goes down, you know. Chanchala, goddess of fortune, nobody can keep her. She's nobody. She's the wife of Krishna. She stays always with Krishna. So everybody thinks, oh, I want her to be my wife. I want her to be always associated with me in my house and we'll always have everything. Wealth and all the good opulences, but she will abandon you because she only stays with Krishna. But if you stay with Krishna, then you will always be in association with the goddess of fortune. Yatra yogeshwara krishno, yatra partho dhanurdhara, tatra shrir vijayo bhutir dhruva nitir matir mama. So wherever there's Krishna and there's Arjuna, there is always fortune, morality, victory and extraordinary power. So we should always keep the Bhagavad Gita written in our hearts, study it every day, distribute it to people, and increase its fame. We also have the project to put Bhagavad Gitas in the motel rooms throughout the country. Most of the motels, economy lodgings, more than 50% of economy lodgings, something like 60%, are owned by Hindu families now in the United States. Mostly Gujarati families, Patels, they have all these motels all over. And so Krishna has sent them into that industry. And now, if with a little persuasion, they will include the Bhagavad Gitas in the desk drawers, in the nightstands, just like they have already the holy Bibles, Gideon's Bibles. So we can have them holy Bhagavad Gitas too. And so in this temple, Mayapur Bihari Prabhu and Dilip Patel and others have been involved in introducing these Bhagavad Gitas, and we have millions of hotel rooms. We said originally 10 years, but I think I've increased it to 5 years. We want to put a million books in these hotel rooms, and the people that come and they read those books. When you're in the hotel and you have time and you've got nothing else to do and you don't want to watch CNN and, you know, or pay-per-view movie and, you know, you say, what's in the drawer? Oh, it's Bhagavad Gita. I've always been meaning to see. What is this about? You know, and you'll start reading it. And it's Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita because it's explained from the standpoint of pure devotional service, which is, of course, the only standpoint by which one can really understand the confidential knowledge that Krishna is teaching, as he says over and over in Bhagavad Gita. Somehow people miss that. So when people read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, they become devotees of Krishna. Although there were hundreds of other translations, commentaries in English before, but nobody became a devotee of Krishna. Now they're all becoming devotees of Krishna. So I don't know if I answered that, you know. Yeah.
My question, Prabhu, thank you.
If we suffer because somebody near to us in our family does something, then maybe we're destined for that suffering that we were involved. Why are we in that family? Why are we in that village? You know, maybe we were involved in some, you know, our karma can be very intertwined and go through many, and it's inconceivable to us. Somebody, go ahead, Deepak Prabhu.
Prabhu, on a similar note, actually, while, you know, what the story you told about the king who was donating so many cows, same problem arises sometimes, or not the problem, we are put onto the crossroads sometimes in the services where, you know, someone has a direction in one way, other has a direction in another way. And, you know, it's like one of the calf moving from one side to another, and then someone is saying, no, I want it this way. Another wants, no, I want it that way. And we sometimes, not very, at ISV we are very lucky. I was discussing this with one of my godbrother, senior godbrother, and he was even insisting that don't take too much of service in temples. You know, which to me was very much, people who has enthusiasm, utsaha should come forward. You know, if everybody just thinks in action, you know, just being in, you know, knowledge is better than in action. So I just wanted your comment. What is best for avoiding such kind of situation in the day-to-day service one does in the temple situation? Thus, these things happen, and that is more related with Krishna. Hopefully, there is no contamination in the heart of the person who is performing it.
Yes, we need good mechanisms for dispute resolution within ISKCON. We have some very nice devotees like Brajavihari and Brahmatirtha Prabhu. They do mediation services within ISKCON. Because Srila Prabhupada told us that Krishna has taken birth in this movement. As long as the leaders follow the principles and chant their rounds, this movement is undoubtedly going to be successful. That nobody from outside the movement can hinder the progress of this movement. But from inside the movement, if the devotees fight with one another, then that will hinder the progress. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Krishna says, when the devotees are all chanting, talking about Krishna, then Krishna appears there, and it becomes very clear. You know, when we read the Bhagavatam, Ishvara Satyavarudyate Trikritibis Shushushibis Tatkshanat, you know, the Lord appears in our hearts when we read the Bhagavatam. In the assembly of faithful devotees who respect each other. This is part of Vaishnava etiquette that all Vaishnavas have to respect other Vaishnavas. In their mind they respect the neophytes, but their body they respect the Madhyama Adhikaris, and they seek out and faithfully serve those who are free from, and the tendency even to criticize others, who are completely free from envy and who are always vigorously engaged in preaching work, the Uttama Adhikaris, vigorously engaged in devotional service. So, in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lord Chaitanya says, when the devotees argue with one another, then Krishna leaves. Immediately. He doesn't stay. So, Kali Yuga is very very disturbed by this Hare Krishna Sankirtan movement. It's chasing away Kali Yuga. There's one play we used to perform, The Age of Kali, by a Bengali playwright. I think his name was Ghosh or Bosh? Ghosh, I think. Anyway, the Kali Yuga is there with his six minions like lust, greed, envy, anger, illusion, and, you know, so forth, madness. And then somehow when the Sankirtan comes and he hears the chanting party, then he gets frightened and has to run away. This is described in the first canto, how the punishment and reward of Kali, that, you know, Parikshit Maharaj arrested him. He said, I won't allow Kali Yuga to exist in my kingdom, this hypocrisy and quarrel and so forth. And then Kali Yuga surrendered to him and said, please, because, you know, there's a season for everything, and this is the Lord's arrangement that there is a Kali Yuga. So he surrendered and he said, please, I'm a surrendered soul. I'm also one of your citizens. I'll do whatever you say. Don't kill me. And Parikshit Maharaj said, then you have to leave my kingdom. And he said, but how will I live outside of your kingdom? I'm your citizen. You have to take care of me. What will I do? Please take care of me. So then Parikshit Maharaj said, okay, you can live where they have illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. There you can live. And then Kali said, what is this? There's none of that in your kingdom, because you're a good king, and you won't, you know, by your expert skills of administration, not a single person is committing sins in your kingdom, so how can I live? So he said, all right, then wherever the gold is being hoarded, wherever wealth is being hoarded and stored, people are keeping gold, and in piles of gold, then you can live there. Because if there are stockpiles of money, there'll be pressure to spend them on sinful activities. So a brahmana, a liberal brahmana, if you give him $1 million today, he will arrange for sacrifice and the distribution and use it in Krishna's service. And tomorrow he'll have nothing again, you know. Or maybe it'll be a big sacrifice and it'll go for 2 weeks or something. But the idea is he's not going to save, he's not a kripana. He's not saving it and thinking, well, what will I do for my retirement? How will I have enough for the, you know. So maybe, you know, what later I might want a condo in Florida and, if I spend it now, I won't be able to get. So Kali Yuga wants us to quarrel. And sometimes I see among devotees almost supernatural forces at work trying to create dissension and quarrel among devotees. And my understanding, I haven't ever confirmed this, I should go and confirm this with superior devotees and ask them, but my understanding is, I know this can't be, it's not, in the ordinary course of events, people don't have these misunderstandings. You know, somehow, sometimes you watch comedy movies and things like that. Like, I don't, you probably haven't seen them, most of you from India, but the old Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers movies. But they're a certain kind of farce, you know, with a lot of singing and dancing. But usually there's some original mistake, you know, that somebody is really the count, but he pretends to be, or somebody is really the dance instructor, but he pretends to be a count. And then the girl is really a dance student, but she pretends to be a princess or whatever, and then they have to go through the whole thing, you know, trying to keep this. If one person just was able to say, you know, look, no, he's not the count, he's really the dance instructor, then they wouldn't be mad at each other and they'd live happily ever after. But it takes the whole movie where there's just these near misses where somebody doesn't understand, something is just not understood. And you think in real life that wouldn't happen, you know, that somebody's writing this story and they're making, and it's funny and they're making it so that, you know, that everything is just somehow or another misunderstood in order to create enmity. But as my temple president in Vancouver, Bahuduk, used to say, strange things happen in the world of ISKCON. And and strange things happen among devotees. So, but the practical question is how to avoid it. First of all, you know, we should all find a group of devotees in whom we have confidence. We need friends. We need friends that, and we need devotees that we admire. We need superior Vaishnavas, our mentors, to guide us, and that we can take shelter of, and that we can approach with our questions. And we have to stay stay among people that we can be faithful with. And we have to be respectful to others, but we have to be averse to quarreling and criticism. Okay? And you know, we have to understand. Srila Prabhupada's, you know, last wish, kind of, it's often presented as a last wish. I don't know exactly how and when he said it, but yeah, toward the latter part of his pastimes, he told the devotees that, you know, my desire is that you show your love for me by how you cooperate together to push on the mission of this ISKCON. You know, that we have to actually cooperate with each other always. Sometimes there are devotees out there, you'll encounter them in this world, you can't avoid encounter, as much as we wish you didn't even hear from them. That if you're on Facebook, forget it, you know. But there are devotees. Let's see, what was I saying? You will show your love by how you cooperate. I had an idea and it went in and it went out. But that we have this you know, we have a mission to do. We have to spread this Krishna consciousness all over the world. And to do it, we need to become enlightened and we need to have firm friendship and we need to have reading Srila Prabhupada's books and really understanding it. And that's what I was going to say. Sometimes you encounter devotees who say, oh, everything in ISKCON was great, before Prabhupada passed away. And then when Prabhupada passed away, everything turned horrible. And some people who say that are only like 20 years old. So they Prabhupada passed away 33 years ago. But those of us who were around in the 70s, we know that, you know, Prabhupada picked up powerful, intelligent, young, mostly young men and women from mostly countercultural movement. The Vietnam War was going on. We were protesting what the older people would do. Don't trust anyone over 30, everything. A lot of the leaders, they couldn't very well cooperate with each other, and they had personality conflicts. And Srila Prabhupada was, sometimes he would be able to resolve them. Often he would just send someone somewhere else then, you know. All right, Tamal Krishna, if you can't get along with Guru Kripa or something like that, then you have a bus over there and you have a bus over there. Or you go to Japan and you go to China and you go to whatever. I'm not actually speaking historically, and I shouldn't name names because it's every, you know, all leaders, you know. And Trivikram Swami had a problem in Japan with Guru Kripa. And, you know, I mean, we could go down the line. You know, everybody had a problem working with everybody else. And we have a big world and lots of service to do. And, you know, Prabhupada gave different leaders different fields. And this way the movement spread. Go develop it in your own way. You know, go to Poland. You know, he sent Harikesh to Poland, not because of any conflict. Harikesh was his secretary. He wanted to spread the movement out there. Then he said later, he told Harikesh, you know, you thought I was rejecting you because I was sending you away. You were my personal secretary and then I sent you out. But now you see, you've developed this whole land and I gave you a field to do your service. But we do have to learn to be able to work as a unit, you know. The world has to see. Prabhupada says in the beginning, in the preface of Srimad Bhagavatam, what's the problem? And it's Kali Yuga, and there's large-scale quarrels, even for insignificant reasons. You know, this is relevant to the verse we're reading today about how quarrels between kings or between heads of state develop somehow by some unseen force, and then everybody gets destroyed. That's the nature of Kali Yuga. It's the age of quarrel, and we don't know why. People are just feeling irritable, and they can't stand each other, and they, you know, everyone's getting on everyone else's last nerve, and there's quarrels. And if we're chanting the 16 rounds, we're following the four regular principles, we're always chanting Hare Krishna, we don't have any gold that we're storing, you know, Kali Yuga can't really affect us. So that may be one solution. But what I was saying is that this Srimad Bhagavatam is presented. Srila Prabhupada says that human society at the present moment is not in the darkness of oblivion. It's made rapid progress in the fields of material comforts, education, economic development throughout the entire world, but there is a pinprick somewhere in the social body at large, and therefore there are large-scale quarrels even over less important issues. There is a need of a clue as to how humanity can become one in peace, friendship, and prosperity with a common cause. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need, for it is a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. In other words, we have advancement of Iron Age technology, Kali Yuga technology, we have communications, transportation, you know, electric things and everything like that, but it's Kali Yuga, and so we're suffering from the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, and nobody's honest, and the principles of religion, truthfulness, cleanliness, austerity, mercy, they're almost completely absent. And this Srimad Bhagavatam will restore all these things. This Sankirtan movement will restore all these things. But to actually restore these things, we have to be able to show that in our society, we have that proper relations, the dealings among devotees. We have proper etiquette. We know how to properly respect Vaishnavas. I think this is another problem, is we haven't learned the etiquette very well to properly show our respect for Vaishnavas and you know, devotees like Bhakti Churu Swami, Radhanath Swami, they're teaching us, so many Vaishasika, they're teaching us to have good manners. You know, we have to have good manners and not offend devotees, because when we defend, I was reading a book the other day that was saying that when you defend devotees, especially superior devotees, then according to the Shastra, what happens to you is that you can't do any devotional service, and all you can do is criticize other devotees. It becomes your, as Shivaram Swami wrote this book, and I have to look up, you know, his footnote where he's quoting that from. But he says certain people, as the, you know, this is the reaction for offending superior devotees who've been merciful to you and disclosed Krishna to you. Because the Vaishnava is the only one who can give us Krishna, right? Oh, hey, Vaishnava Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings this song. The Vaishnavas, they have Krishna, they can give Krishna to you. Where else can we find Krishna, right? We can find it in Krishna Katha from faithful Vaishnavas who know. So they're all our gurus, really. They may not be our initiating guru, but every Vaishnava who can explain Krishna to us is to be respected as, a great superior, a great fortune for us to come in contact with someone who's a devotee of Krishna, who has faith in Krishna, and who can explain Krishna. Even if they're not liberated, they don't have to be the topmost, person and be completely free from all faults. They came, you're Vartmer Pradarshika Guru. Someone for each of you came and said, oh, have you heard of Prabhupada? Have you heard of these books? I mean, you may have been born in a place where you had faith in Krishna in your family and everything, but somebody turned you in the direction, why don't you become serious about being a devotee of Krishna? Why don't you become serious about chanting Hare Krishna? Why don't you become serious about paying attention to Swami Prabhupada? And those people you owe such a great debt to. So Shivaram Swami was writing in this book, he said that if you neglect and disrespect such superior devotees who've given you such mercy, then you suffer a result that means that you don't want to serve Krishna anymore, but you spend all your energy in criticizing other devotees. And I think I've met such people. And, it's sad. I'm not making fun or anything like that. It's very sad. And how do we solve that? And not that it was necessary, not that they had, not that bad things didn't happen to them too. People may have been offending each other and disrespecting each other, and things didn't go on harmoniously. And it's hard to manage a society of devotees and to build a community of devotees and to build it on firm platform of proper devotional service. So we can only try our best and try to avoid, as much as possible, we should not tolerate, sitting around and listening to people criticize devotees. That won't be good for us. And we don't want to give them energy by paying them too much attention. But we should cooperate with devotees we like. Ramananda Sakha has something. And then we have to stop because I'm going on too long. I'm really...
This quarreling and criticism, these two things, they are two different things, because one is quarreling, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to criticize it. Quarreling can come during the day-to-day service activities, because if two people are serving Krishna and there could be some conflicts and they could quarrel with each other for that part of the service, but that doesn't mean that they're going to criticize each other. They could still have respect, and so sometimes the quarreling can come also spontaneously. That is, at that moment someone acted and immediately the reaction, but it doesn't mean that both the devotees, they keep that in mind and then and they continue in a criticism or something. So the question is, if they do not have this criticizing attitude, but they just quarrel because of some kind of service for that moment, and then they don't have, and if they don't keep that in mind for the future, do you call that as a quarreling or something different?
Well, if they quarrel, it's quarreling, but it's a good point that you're making. And, this is the world, the material world, and we are persons, individuals, and Srila Prabhupada said we shouldn't expect, even in the society of devotees, we shouldn't expect utopia, because we're human beings and we're going to have differences, and we're going to, even though we're devotees. And Chanakya Pandit said that when husband and wife bicker, he said, nobody should take that very seriously, because just like the rams in the mountains, they butt their heads against each other. It's part of the way they behave, and they're not really trying to kill each other. They're just, it's their ongoing behavior. So we're all family. And Gaur Govinda Maharaj had one I saw one video where he was talking and he was saying how important that was. In fact, he was feeling some anxiety that something, the GBC, he was on the GBC and there was some vote and it didn't go the way he thought it should have gone. He thought it was actually against the Mahatmas, against the Acharyas, that some decision was made on some point of philosophy. Probably he was right. And he was feeling that this is causing great pain. But he was quoting a song from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I don't know the song, but it was a song where he was saying, you know, we have to treat each other, we have to see each other as brothers. And we have to, we're being enjoined by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that we have to tolerate even the okay, we sold one Srimad Bhagavatam, one Isha Upanishad. Nice ringtone though. You get half points off for that. So we have to be brothers, you know, and sometimes there's going to be a quarrel and then we have to make up. And that's important, you know, we have to say, excuse me, I'm sorry, I didn't want to, you know, and pay obeisances and please forgive me. Because mostly when we quarrel, it's false ego is involved. We're concerned that someone is disrespecting me. I'm not this body really, and let someone call me name. For devotees, it can roll off them, you know. For devotees, you know, general things, you know, about someone didn't respect the way I did, or they wanted to do something a little bit differently. And mostly we quarrel because we're devotees. We quarrel over preaching strategies and how should we organize the Sankirtan movement and how should we address the deities and how, you know, whatever, you know. But there should be order and sanity to it, and we should get, you know, intelligent and sane and solidly faithful devotees in charge of things, and we should organize well in a good sort of corporate structure so that we don't have a, you know, sort of an anarchy with everybody fighting against everybody. But when we have some little quarrels, Lord Chaitanya advises that we should be humble like grass, tolerant like the tree, ready to offer all respect to others, not expecting any respect in return. And then we can focus on chanting the holy name constantly. And we should let it roll off us, these little quarrels. Don't hold them and hold grudges. But also, it can hurt sometimes. You know, it can hurt when, especially among devotees, these are intimate. You know, as devotees, you become devotees, you can't really be close friends with anyone who's not a devotee. You know that, right? All of you feel that. You know, that you have something now is a very intimate thing. You're chanting Hare Krishna. You're related to Krishna and to Krishna's devotees. And there's something very deep and intimate there. And then Krishna's devotees can be your best friends. And if Krishna's devotees have some break with you, or they betray you, or you feel that they've chased you away or kicked you out or something, it can be terrible, terrible pain. And maybe some of that's happened within our society of devotees, and we have to try to reconcile that and you know, heal wounded people and you know. But anyway, we could have a whole seminar on all that stuff, or Mahatma could do a seminar because he's good at all that, you know, all the touchy feely, you know, human psychology stuff. But it's getting very late, and we have to have Guru Puja, and we have to go out on Sankirtan. So, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.